So it's called Material Journeys. The idea of it, or the thread all along, has been this exploration of the quantification of the museum catalogues by different means. So the project kind of has its origin in the digitization of the museum catalogue and the ways in which artifacts and exhibits were measured and quantified, and in somewhat unsatisfactory ways, that kind of incomplete information, fuzzy data, but represented as if it was somehow the truth or singular fact. And so I think we were interested in other ways of approaching the collection through kind of quantification methods, and specifically the materiality the collection comprises. So all the different things that make up the exhibits, the base elements, if you like, the raw materials, and kind of trying to quantify them and give them a scale and a feel beyond the idea of the artifact itself, particularly because there's some of those artifacts, or many of those artifacts, were kind of, yeah, described from a singular point of view, let's say, from the point of view of the collector rather than the creator of any of those things. And the purpose of the piece is somehow to reorganize the collection on different terms.
Yeah, and also I think because the project has had different, like many different kind of outputs already, and some more followed like to more of a finished result, and some explored a little bit like as an idea only. But it's always been central, this kind of to kind of step back and like think about how do we experience volume, and to sort of try to think of how we experience volume or mass in relation to our own body. And so then when you think about the museum collection in terms of volume or mass, it seems also easier to understand in relation to your own body the sheer volume of it, if you think about it in terms of the raw material or the objects that you can relate to already as sort of either symbolic in size or like the category of coins, which is really this like quite literally symbol of value within the context, but then taken out of context, it is just a pool of different materials that hold value in their own context. So that has always been central, I think, in all the explorations we've done. And also, I think you put it very nicely yesterday, Phil, when we had a chat about how there is this sort of the way the data is stacked is very much qualitative and like quantitative, and then but the way we introduce visitors to the piles or to the volumes is definitely qualitative, and there's no measure anywhere except this is all of it, and this is all of it in relation to your body. It will reach you up to your chest, or so there's a bit of a switch there to try to activate people's senses in a way, if that doesn't sound too odd. Like also using language that is not leaning on existing visual references, and trying to sort of appeal to how to use your senses to understand this sheer size of something.
Yeah, I think we try to use this kind of quantitative units, so mass and volume and things, but qualitative measurements within those units, if it makes sense.
That's how you said it. It was very nice. I wrote it down.
This must be very special. But when you talk about the work, I think it has changed quite a lot. It must have changed quite a lot over the time that you've been working on it. Could you talk us through the different versions of the work you've made, and what happened between? What were the decisions or the reasons for these different versions that you have been making or working on?
Yeah, it's an interesting timeline.
I guess we have
the just to count the versions. There is the version of the first work session, then there is the version of the prototype, then there is the work weekend in Brussels, and then exhibition, and then now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of versions. I think that the thread that connects them all seems very familiar to me, even though we've had these kind of different instantiations of it. There's been a consistency of the idea, and I don't know if I would say that the idea itself is, I don't know if it sounds bad or not, but whether the idea itself is necessarily evolved rather than it being explored in different ways. So the initial thing that we worked on was this. There was a kind of intersection about physical and digital things. So I was taking, some of the data sets from the museum and trying to just visualize those volumes of various different material types and collections, and to try and give it some spatiality beyond the artifacts itself. And then Mia, you were producing the audio guide.
Yeah, I was producing an audio guide. And this was kind of, at this point, we were kind of working separately, but like more interested in each other's project. And I was using your close stacking or your data to kind of feed the audio guide to have an idea of what is the more or less what is the collective size of these different material categories. And I guess also the first thing we really did together was to start to look at what material categories we found interesting. So we at some point compiled a list of what we found interesting, and interesting is, I mean, because they don't have like a very strict protocol for them, more than that they all kind of either they're all kind of creepy in a way. They all say something about what is in a museum collection. Some of them are more, they are all small, but maybe most of them in connection with also the violence that is in a museum collection. And I think that was the first thing we did together, was to sort of look at this and look at what are the material categories that can kind of hold these different storylines within them.
Understand better, like, what do you mean if you say violence in the collection?
The material categories we decided to then look at is, for instance, all the objects made out of bones, animal restraint, animal equipment and restraints, which we discovered is also holds all kinds of restraints, animal or not. We decided also to take the one that is like, I don't know, one that is boxes, because it was sort of about like, what is this act of storing and, I don't know, collecting. We have all the heads, which, because in the museum collection, there is no differentiation between actual human heads and depictions of heads. We have all the coins, which I touched upon a little bit earlier, with this thing of like, what does it mean to take a material value out of its context? Out of the context where it has value. And then we have all the objects made out of hair, which also because we wanted to really make also people experience it in relation to the body. So we were quite interested in hair. And then the two last ones are, one is fruit, because fruit is something that is experienced as very ephemeral, very like it decomposes very fast. So this idea to kind of try to take objects or make objects out of fruit that then should supposed to be to last sort of forever, which often the museum tries to, you know, maintain it for a much longer time, was also mm-hmm. a kind of a contrast that also speaks in some way about what the material museum collection is. And then the last one is unidentified raw material, which is a tag that goes onto any object that the museum can't identify what it is of, which mm-hmm. also is a very large category and also speaks something of how these objects are handled by by people who don't actually know how it's made, but also this sort of this kind of to me at least there is a kind of the museum is often defended as a sort of educational institution, but then there is also sort of signs to there are a kind of easy a bit quick ways out to say but this goes under the material category unidentified raw material, doesn't to me speak of that there is a moment of education perhaps in that layer.
I think that's a really kind of good it's a good example of, I think, something that has evolved over the part of the central idea that has evolved over the different versions of this, which is mm-hmm. that from the beginning, I think we thought we were aware that the data that we were getting from the museum would be flawed, but I don't think we were quite aware of how flawed it was. So the sort of the original, let's say, intent somehow, at least from my part of it, was to make a sort of, let's say, accurate if not precise quantification, right, based on some of these material categories. But mm-hmm. as you start using the information that they provide, you realize there's so many gaps, so fuzzy, there's so much of it is kind of pure guess and filling in cells in a spreadsheet, or even then just sort of, as you say, me almost just giving up and saying, oh, I don't know what this is. And so the sort of quantification effort is so sort of hollow almost at the beginning, but then as we go through the different versions of it, we became I think much less interested as to whether this was the representation of those material categories. We became less interested whether that representation was particularly precise or not.
It also seemed it mattered less to the work whether this was exactly it or whether this was about the size, mm-hmm. because the work was a lot more about than trying to create an experience of it, like on a kind of physical level or something like that.
Yeah, again, we were talking about this yesterday, Mia, weren't we? That think about something like the hair collection. Sort of, I don't really know what numerical value you could put to that to say the volume of hair in the museum is X cubic meters or whatever. What number you would put to it that would somehow be of use to anybody? I don't know whether I'd be shocked to find out that it was 5 cubic meters or half of 1 cubic meter, or you know what I mean. The idea somehow is that there is a collection of objects that are made out of hair, and so it's almost posed the question of, like, why on earth would you collect things made out of hair rather than that's a lot of hair.
Mia, you talked about the museum presenting themselves as an educational institution. And it's interesting because it was sort of it was part of this the let's say the narrative of arguments giving to kind of explaining and justifying the hoarding of all those objects and materials and knowledge and resources, but then now with this oncoming shift to digitalization and all those objects being scanned and digitized, there's sort of two argument kind of
confronting each other, saying that on one part, because of this digitization, there's the object somehow can move towards the museum, let's say, physical space, and then that somehow the ownership kind of becomes a bit more blurry, it can travels, but also that that makes somehow that it's not like the museum could let go of those objects, because they have a sort of trace from it, so it could become an argument for restitution. But on the other side, some could say also, yeah, but because it's traveling now, there's no need for restitution, because it can stay in the museum and just travel all around. And I'm wondering for you how you see this, whether those two shift, whether it's gonna tighten the ownership of the object, or whether it's gonna loosen up it a little bit.
Well, I think there is a great opportunity for it to loosen up. I think, I mean, it's almost like all those when we went to the back of the museum to the whole foundry with all the molds and the casts of the statues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, a digital copy is I mean, as long as you go with the argument of we need to hold these objects because of education,
mm-hmm.
then I think digitization can kind of find a way around that. Like, okay, you can still have the knowledge about it. We can mm-hmm. file it. We can digitize it. And but I mean, whether I think that will happen immediately, I think there's a lot of resistance. So I'm not sure. I hope there would be. I really think there is an opportunity or a potential there, but I'm not sure. And perhaps this kind of to think about using digital, like this material journeys that we are doing, for instance, not to like, it's not, it doesn't have to be our project, not to heighten our own project, but to try to think of how to create something really experiential. How do you say that in English? Like something that feels a bit like a physical experience of something could mm-hmm. be a way of, I don't know. I'm not sure if I personally it could be a way to come to meet the museum, to say like there's a place for having a room where we can educate ourselves, there's a place for school trips, there's a place for I don't know, but they have to be made on different terms, and perhaps these kind of interventions could be a way to like use that space in a different way, I'm not sure I'm articulating it well. I think that
no, it's just because
education is a bit of a fake argument. I think some people believe it, but it's also used in cases where it's not, people just want to hold on to the stuff, you know. So you can then take them seriously on this argument and say, okay, but then we develop this for you, and you can still continue your educating. But I'm not sure if it wouldn't just result in another argument popping up, you know, another reason.
I mean, maybe because when we were preparing this conversation and thinking about your work in relation to these questions, we were wondering about whether the digitization and the thinking about its materiality in another space would actually, I mean, one, you can say, if you make a virtual space, then you would have another environment for doing the education. But that's maybe even a too solutionist version of what we were trying to ask about. It's more like how the thinking through the material in the digital could help to somehow loosen this kind of proprietary relation to the objects, or think them through. Or And this is maybe what we also saw in the way institutions deal with digitizations. Sometimes it also produces more obsessive relations to the objects. They become actually harder to let go of because they become somehow woven into a web of documentation and yeah, assertions of ownership.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to put my faith and my hopes in the former.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I would see that as the natural way to go.
Yeah, I think that the potential in this and what somehow we've been trying to explore is how can you explore these artifacts, these collections, kind of on their own terms, right? In abstract from the kind of applied knowledge the institutions hold over them or connect to them, and somehow breaking those connections. Mm-hmm. through digitization, it seems like a moment to try it, at least, because otherwise it is incredibly hard, because all of those other sort of ownership issues so those ownership processes are so tied to the physical artifact itself. And the moment digitization starts to become something kind of interesting, and potentially the kind of multiplicity of these objects as well. I think the museums create this kind of singular idea that there's only one story to tell, there's only one version of this thing that's so rarely true. And I think one of the things that we became quite interested in was this, with the scanning of the not that we did anything particularly specific in the work, but it was a kind of parallel thing, that the scanning of museum artifacts by not the museum themselves, so the kind of guerrilla 3D scanning that someone was doing and posting kind of models to online 3D printing platforms, and that was kind of interesting in a way this person's method of capturing that object, that artifact, was very different. The technical devices they were using and the purpose by which they were, the reason they wanted to sort of scan them, let's say, would be very different as well. So sort of offered the idea that you could have many, 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 many different scans or captures, let's say, of these things, as well as just many versions of this, or many interpretations of the same capture. And I think that there's a kind of technological kind of fork in the road here as well, right? There's a kind of desire somehow in scanning technology to capture the thing perfectly. Like, I think in the art world, there's this kind of constant sort of arms race to have better and better digital scanning for security reasons, so that you can really see the texture and the patina of the oil paint on a canvas, for example, as if you somehow tend towards a perfect replica, a digital replica. Or you say, well, that's never going to happen. How about we focus on why we capture, and therefore on what we do with that possibility?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think also like this is also somewhere where in our project we've sort of taken a turn at some point or made a decision, because this, I think what you're also mentioning, Femke, with this sort of when it results in like even further obsession about the object itself, is when there is this like precise replica is also a romantification in a way, and a very much focus on one object. And I think also part of what we kind of put into our project is it is also like highlight of the absurdity of the size, to try to get an experience of, for instance, all the objects that are made out of bones, or all the objects that are made out of hair or fruit. It is also like, once you, if you do get that experience of how large that volume is, it also kind of highlights a bit the question, hopefully, of should the museum have this? Like, should it? Instead of evaluating each, like scrutinizing each individual object, it is more in its whole that you do see kind of what an enterprise it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So I do hope that it sort of hits people a bit with its absurdity more than, I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot to ask about, but one of the things we try to do is also to bring questions from one project to the other. So yesterday we started speaking with Com and Marie, who have been working on the Incertitude collection, and we asked them to ask you a question. And so I'm relaying this question to you now, which is, like, they were really wondering about what happens to the aura of objects when they're moved into a virtual space. So wondering about the going online of cultural institutions and the promises of virtual reality to replace. And this is in a way the other side of what we were trying to ask about. So how would you think objects function within virtual space? Objects and their aura.
Do you mean in terms of the, like, by aura, do you mean like in kind of the reverence you might have for them in some way, their presence?
I think that's what they were asking about. Yes, I think also it comes from maybe their work on certainty and uncertainty and the way that breaks the authority of the object. So here it's maybe more the...
Well, I think that the promise or potential, let's say, of the digital space over the physical of the institution is the possibility for this kind of multiplicity kind of thing. So you don't have to have a singular object anymore. Like, very often museum collections have an example of something, of which there would have been many in real life, and then all of those many instances, let's say, of that object, have their stories are lost and or condensed and compressed into a kind of, you know, a singular narrative built around falsely built around one object. And I think the digital can have that kind of, it can allow those threads to be unwound or unwoven a little bit more. Some of these things have a reverence because they're in the institution, not because of what they actually are in their own terms. And actually their quality is about the fact that they were everywhere, not just that there was only one that survives. And I think there's a mundaneity, if that's a word, like there's an everyday many of these kinds of objects that's completely lost through their position in an institution. Especially an institution that's kind of so distant from the sort of cultural origins of those objects. But regardless of whether it was an institution that was kind of situated in a particular, that had a better relationship, let's say, with the origins of any of the artifacts, then there is still this kind of reductiveness to the individual instance, rather than the idea that this is kind of part of a collection. The collection really is kind of is performed, right? Like, it's in real life. How can you? That's where the interesting thing is, no? Well, at least
I would think some, like, in a way it could, in the question of like what happens to the aura. Well, it kind of could also put a question to what is the aura or the presence of the object and the meaning of objects around us, or like objects. I don't know. Also coming personally from a background of working with crafts and art, I don't know, like physical material and thinking a lot about making objects. I do think, there's something quite performative about how it is in a museum right now, and kind of fearing the loss of something of that is also something that was created by the museums. So perhaps it could open up for ideally it could open up for really an evaluation of what is the meaning of objects and the presence of objects around us and the stories we attach to them because there is, I mean, we do all attach a lot of, value of affection, affections value. No, this is not an English word. We do attach a lot of story.
So we almost, I think we're almost going to an end. We do this thing of question to other artists. We would like you to come up with a question for Zelikon, but
he's the next person and the next project we will discuss after this. So this is the different versions are possible. Project. So he's still working with ways of intervening in normative practices within Wikipedia and trying to, literally intervene into that space. So, is there anything you would like to ask him?
The obvious parallel between I think at least what I understand that he's exploring to what we're doing is this kind of to try and pull apart the idea of a trajectory towards a singular knowledge, right? Even something like in Wikipedia's whole kind of technology infrastructure at least is about kind of a tendency towards resolving, if I can use that word with air quotes on the audio. Resolving knowledge into sort of, okay, now at least we all agree with this.
Yeah.
And somehow like museum is also doing that, right? Like it's sort of going, we have the most learned people here. This is what we all think of this artifact or this object, and that we present this knowledge back to you, and you must just kind of consume without question. But with an institution, there's hardly any method of contribution at all. Projects like this are not sort of commonplace. And whilst Wikipedia editing has kind of many, many obvious flaws in its processes, there is still some degree to that. I'm so interested, I guess, in how, in our case, it's more confrontational, I think, to challenge the museum. So it's obviously oppositional, whereas it's not quite so obviously oppositional than Wikipedia. There's some people who edit Wikipedia who say, well, already we have this possibility that you could kind of be.
Yeah, there's history.
So I don't know. So it's interesting how that, it almost makes it harder, right? Because they're sort of going, well, we already do this. I don't know what your problem is. within our situation, sort of obviously oppositional. And so,
But are you interested in like how you ask this question in an environment that is already like assuming that it's has solved the problem?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's right. No? That's really good grasp, but I think it's kind of interesting to me. And definitely, what sort of tactics and approaches are. And needed, because presumably for ours it's in one sense polemical. You could look at it like that and say, well, it stands in opposition, it's supposed to be controversial, is not the right word, but it sort of doesn't necessarily offer an obvious certainly not solutionist, if to use the word you said before, but whereas in the Wikipedia world, I sort of feel like you have to be a little bit more, the expectation might be that you have to be more useful somehow in implementing this, right?
Yeah,
and it's also just the fact that you are when you're targeting a non or less centralized or structure. Wikipedia often uses the defense of showing the face that is sometimes it feels a bit like many-headed. Beings I don't know, we have in Norwegian folklore and I think in many others as well, and it's kind of like, yeah, one of those might be dealing with the issues but the other ones are actually working completely against it, but then if you criticize them they're going to present you with the part that is trying to work on it, even though that is one out of seven heads that are kind of on your side. So how to navigate that would be.
Mm-hmm.
Or how Shelko sees
their position to that, maybe.
Yeah. Are there other things you would like to add? With like 2 minutes left.
I think one of the things that's been like super interesting to me for all the way through all of this is the kind of, very simplistically put, is the kind of intersection of physical and digital in terms of the kind of practice of both of Mia and I and the kind of things that we do. It's not that we work on exactly the same part of the project at all times together. Mm-hmm. There's an overlaps and intersections between these things, and we kind of learn differently about each other's practice, let's say. And I think that's been like really, really kind of like a really nourishing part of it all along in terms of as the idea has evolved and the instances of it have evolved, that it doesn't just kind of go down this kind of rabbit hole of, like really weedly tech kind of thing. It's in the materials, the only things, it's in the stacks and the volumes, it's there all along, but I think it's also in the practice itself, the act of kind of doing it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a nice point to end on, I think.
Yeah, and good to not forget.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.